You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jeb Bush for president? No, seriously, I think that there's a very serious possibility of this. And in fact, there's a website. Oh, that's interesting. Jeb Bush for president, not. I'm looking at JebBushForPresident.com. Anyhow, ABC News has published a piece. This was actually like last year, but the speculation is starting to ramp up again. This was titled Another President Bush, Will Jeb Bush Set Sights on the White House? And talking about how many Republicans are, and he's trying to kind of position himself as the moderate. And you've heard him speaking out lately about the crazies in the Republican Party. I am concerned that this, that if we end up with a brokered Republican convention, what's going to come out of that is the wise elders or the rich fat cats of the party are going to say, you know, Mitt Romney's fatally flawed. He can't, you know, he can't even win his own state, basically. This is Ricky Santorum, for example, this morning, saying, hey, don't give Romney all a spin. Give me some of that spin. Here he is.
We won Michigan last night by coming out of Michigan with 15 delegates out of 30 delegates in Mitt Romney's home state, being outspent 6-1. And you want to talk about one segment of the population? This was a huge win for us. Let's play it the way it is. Don't give Romney all the spin.
So, you know, but the reality is the wise elders of the Republican Party are not going to allow Rick Santorum to be the candidate for president. He's too badly damaged. He's too weird. And increasingly, it's looking like Mitt Romney. There's no, you know, he's a sacrificial lamb. I mean, he's going to be Bob Dole? And I think that knowing that the stakes are the Supreme Court, and if the Supreme Court changes, if a Democrat, if specifically President Obama, stays in office for another 4 years, there's a very good chance that several of the justices, particularly including Justice Kennedy, who is the swing vote, who makes all those 5-4 decisions flip to the right, the Justice Kennedy, who is very elderly and increasingly frail, may resign, or, you know, God forbid, may just his health may fail or something, or he might die. I mean, I'm not wishing that on him at all. It's just people get old. It's life is a terminal condition. It's going to hit all of us one day. So were that to happen, the court, since the United States has become basically a kingdom run by the Supreme Court, you know, Congress can, you know, play at making laws all day long, but the Supreme Court can just say, nah, don't think so. The president can talk all day long about, you know, well, we should have this, we should have that, you know, this, you know, I want Obamacare, I want people to have health care. And the Supreme Court is going to sit there and say, yeah, sure, or no, no way. Now, this, of course, as you've heard me rant many times about before on this program, this is not in the Constitution. This is a power that the Supreme Court took onto themselves. Thomas Jefferson nearly took it back, and damn well should have. Instead, he just fumed about it because he actually won the decision in Marbury versus Madison in 1803. And so he had no basis really to challenge it beyond the conception that it was based on, which was that the Supreme Court had this power, which he, you know, Jefferson said, if this decision stands, then indeed the Constitution has become a suicide pact. For by this decision, the judiciary, the Constitution has become a thing of wax to be molded in the hands of the judiciary. I mean, he was right. And whether it was Dred Scott that brought us the Civil War, or whether it was, there's a long list. Citizens United, the most recent outrage. You have a Supreme Court that's basically running the country. So that's what's at stake in this election. And the Republican wise elders in the party, I suspect very much would like to have, even though the Bush name is badly tarnished, it's not going to take that much time to pull Jeb Bush out. He's been well vetted. He was one of the most popular governors Florida's had in a long time. He was, you know, even Democrats liked him. He was a moderate guy. He's married to a Hispanic woman. He speaks fluent Spanish. You've got a huge Hispanic population out there. Jeb Bush, Mitch Daniels ticket, a Jeb Bush, Chris Christie ticket could give Barack Obama a serious run for his money. And when you include the money from the Koch brothers and from Paul Singer and from John Paulson, you know, the billionaires on the hedge fund managers on Wall Street, when you add in and the vulture funds and the private equity funds, maybe even Mitt Romney's guys, you know, who've given $30 million to Mitt Romney would throw in the money. You got Karl Rove with sitting on $100 million. 94% of the time in U.S. elections, regardless of whether it's the incumbent or not, the person who spends the most money wins. And the money, I mean, you know, when right-wing billionaires put money into, for example, a Bush-Christie candidacy, they're investing in something that they expect to get a return on. The oil companies will get more oil drilling, even though we are now, for the first time in 62 years, a net oil exporting country. We are awash in oil. We're having to export it to keep the prices high domestically. But they'll get more because we've become the dirt pit for the world. Right? We take all the pollution from the refining. And then we send that refined gasoline over to England is a big importer of our refined gasoline. Brazil is importing our refined gasoline. China's importing our refined gasoline. We take the pollution and the poison, throw it down Cancer Alley, and we sell. And when we take it, and then the big oil companies that pay no income taxes sell this stuff at a profit. In any case, the bottom line is the Supreme Court is at risk. And speaking of courts. And so therefore, I think, you know, the Supreme Court is at risk, and therefore, I think that a brokered convention it could be the very worst thing that could happen, because this is what might come out of it, and it might be a very bad thing for us. If we end up with 6-3 majorities, 7-2 majorities on the Supreme Court, making these right-wing decisions, handing more and more power to corporations, you got this guy who's going to be assassinated by the, sorry, executed by the state of Alabama. Starting sometime this month, today's the 1st of March, sometime this month this guy's going to be executed. And the killer wore a wig. And somebody's already confessed to being the killer, by the way. This guy's trial was like 3 decades ago, back before they had DNA evidence, and there is DNA in that wig. And this guy is saying, I will pay for you to do the DNA test, and if you find my DNA in that wig, put me to death. But you're not going to find it because I wasn't the killer. But because in 2009, the Supreme Court ruled that due process doesn't mean determining somebody's guilt or innocence. It means you've checked off all the boxes. And, in fact, the state of Alabama has checked off all the boxes, all the way up to the very last box, which is kill a guy. Oh, he's willing to pay for the DNA test? It's not going to cost us. No, sorry, that's not one of the boxes you can check off. This brought to you by the Supreme Court. I'm telling you, the Supreme Court is at stake. And I don't think the Republicans are going to, you know, go quietly into that dark night. Frankly, with Rick Santorum or Mitt Romney. We'll see. But if Santorum keeps up his mojo and now, you know, you've got another billionaire coming out of the woodwork.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Another billionaire for Newt. You know, the Newt's old billionaire said, okay, I'll give you some more money. So, by the way, the Senate just defeated Blunt's amendment on contraception. And it's bad news. Baby, I'm bad news. I'm just bad news, bad news, bad news. Absolutely beautiful day here in Washington, D.C. The reason I walked into work, it's about a mile from where we live. It was just a beautiful day. It is just a beautiful day. And so pleased to be with you. Welcome back. quick reminder, in a week and a day, business day anyway, on March 12th, our show is going to move from noon to 3 Eastern time, that's 9 to noon Pacific time, to noon to 3 Pacific time, 3 to 6 Eastern time. And if that's all confusing, it's just add 3 hours. Federal judges hear, one of the more common things the federal judges hear, aside from business cases, well, actually, many of these are in the context of business cases, they hear discrimination cases. A lot of, I mean, this is a large part of the workload of federal judges, is people who have been discriminated against, civil rights cases, things like that. And how would you feel if you went before a federal judge and you were African-American or Hispanic or gay or whatever, and you had been discriminated against, or a woman, you had been discriminated against in the workplace, and, you know, you felt that you had a legitimate concern, and that judge ruled against you, and then you discovered that that judge had been passing around racist jokes about President Obama being fathered by a dog, which is why he is black. Yeah, that's what the joke said. And the federal judge is Richard Siebel. I believe that's how it's pronounced. It's C-E-B-U-L-L. He was appointed by George W. Bush to a federal district court in Montana. And he came right out yesterday and admitted it, that he forwarded this joke to some friends. In fact, he says in his own defense, he says, the only reason I can explain to you is that I'm not a fan of our president, but this goes beyond not being a fan. This is the judge himself acknowledging that he did wrong. He said, I didn't send it as a racist, although that's what it is. I sent it out because it's anti-Obama. But wouldn't you feel a little uncomfortable going before a judge who'd been sending out racist jokes if you had a you had this kind of an issue? Which brings us to the larger issue, the federal judiciary. Over 90% of our judgeships, not the federal judiciary, the judiciary in general, over 90% of our judgeships now nationwide are decided by election. And increasingly, big corporations and wealthy individuals are putting up millions of dollars, in some cases, for these judgeship positions that only pay, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. But these judges are in a position to make decisions that can mean millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars to the big corporations. Another outcome, another downside of Citizens United, another downside of having a 5-4 majority on the Supreme Court, which is not just, you know, right-wing cranks and not just guys like Thomas and Scalia who flaunt the judicial code of ethics. I mean, this federal judge, Richard Siebel, he may be in trouble because of the judicial code of ethics, because he has to abide by it. The law requires him to abide by it. The Supreme Court has exempted themselves from that law and said, you know, I mean, if a normal federal judge went duck hunting with the defendant in a case that was being argued before his court 2 weeks hence, he would be impeached. He would be fired. He would be removed from the bench. But that's exactly what Scalia did with Cheney, and then decided in Cheney's favor 2 weeks later. And then when reporters asked him about it, he basically told them to you know, put it where the sun doesn't shine. I mean, he just, you know, it's a big, and Thomas's wife, you know, it was when the Supreme Court decided to take the Bush v. Gore case, which stopped the recount in Florida, which basically handed the presidency to George W. Bush, when they decided to take the case, before they'd even ruled on it, Clarence Thomas's wife was sending out emails to right-wingers vetting them for jobs in the Bush administration that didn't exist yet. The decision hadn't been decided yet by the Supreme Court. And yet, you know, he never recused himself. I mean, this is how bizarre it is. The Supreme Court is at risk, and I think this is a BFD. Roy Blunt had this amendment that basically said any employer can decide based on how they feel or believe what medications, are going to be available to you. You get that? That as an employer, if you're a boss, you can decide what drugs your employees, legal pharmaceuticals, can your employees can have covered by their health insurance plan based on your decision of what your particular morality is. Now, how far does this go? And which religions, you know, where does the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster fit in on here? Does your employer have the right to say, well, you know, pirates, we need to bring back pirates because as pirate population goes down, global warming goes up. Obviously, there's a correlation. And so you start having to show up in pirate gear, and pirates didn't have health care. Actually, they probably did. They probably had a doctor on the pirate ship because pirates were little communist communities, oddly enough. But, I mean, you know, where does it end? Well, it ended today, just a few minutes ago. The Blunt Amendment failed. But I've got to share with you Mitt Romney's flip-flops on this, and we'll pick up your calls right after this. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program on Dial Global, Pacifica, Free Speech TV, on every U.S. military base in the world, DirecTV, Dish Network, all over the place.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And, of course, SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Stick around. 27 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The UPI, today, this is today, this is today's United Press International. UPI today, some Republicans, the headline, Republicans seek Jeb Bush candidacy. I told you. I mean, this is, I just got this on a Google search like 5 minutes ago. Some Republicans are hoping former Florida Governor Jeb Bush enters the presidential race, saying he has the minority support Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum lack. As I mentioned, he's married to a Hispanic woman. He speaks fluent Spanish. And Mike McCurry, who is Bill Clinton's press secretary. Quote, what Democrat would not worry about a popular leader from a crucial state who sounds pretty moderate and can rescue the GOP from its anti-Latino death grip? Now, you think Jeb Bush is thinking about running? Oh, he's not? Then why was he in Dallas last Thursday giving a big speech? And why in that speech did he say that he hopes the candidate's approaches will moderate? He viewed as the moderate. In fact, if you go to jebbushforpresident.net, if you Google Jeb Bush for president, what you get is a website put up by a right-wing Republican saying that Jeb Bush should not be the guy who runs for president because he's too moderate. But see, a moderate Republican could actually win. Anyhow, the news is that Andrew Breitbart died of natural causes at the age of 43. My original idea was to simply say that and say no more. But, he's been on the show a number of times. We've had some rather epic battles over the years, actually. And it occurred to me, not as an homage to Andrew Breitbart, who I think was a corrosive force in our body politic, but he was also a human being, to share with you John Donne's poem, For Whom the Bell Tolls. No man is an island entire of itself. Each is a part of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were. as well as if the manner of thine own or thine friends were. Every man's death, each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore seek not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. And I'll leave it at that. Genesee in Medford, Oregon. Hey, Genesee, what's up?
Hi. I'm getting really crazy every time I hear the Bush name coming up. About I don't know why every single person isn't saying that he helped steal an election in 2000 and what he did to the minorities down there. How could he be a friend to minorities? How could he be popular? He stole an election. It's an abomination.
The African Americans in Florida get that. The Hispanics in Florida don't.
Well, someone needs to make it known, and I just think every time his name is mentioned,
and also he had
that. He's a very dangerous man.
Yeah, I agree. I think politically he's a very powerful man. He's very, very rich. He's from a dynastic family. You know, from 1952 until today, with the exception of last year, there has only been one presidential election that didn't have a Nixon, a Dole, or a Bush on the ticket, and that was 64, Goldwater Miller. Every other Republican ticket.
50 years ago. You know, this didn't happen 50 years ago. This was just a little while ago.
I agree. But see, he had Catherine Harris out there as his front person. She took the blame for that. And he emerged rather unscathed. You're talking about the disenfranchisement of 80,000 African Americans, knocking them off the rolls because a company in Texas said that they had names similar to Texas felons, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And
let's not forget, it was this Supreme Court that assisted in that. And that is very dangerous to me. I just think that needs
although,
to be said.
You know, although this anti-Jeb Bush website run by a right-wing Republican says that Jeb Bush appointed members to the Florida Supreme Court who actually wanted to do the recount in 2000, ordered the recount in 2000, and that required the federal, the U.S. Supreme Court, the Rehnquist Court, to step in and stop it. So, but I absolutely agree with you. He's a very, very dangerous guy, and I am concerned about that, and that's why I personally don't support this whole Operation Chaos thing, you know, that Rush Limbaugh's, when he was encouraging people to vote for Hillary or to vote for Obama or whatever, to, you know, make them beat up on each other even more during the Democratic primary 4 years ago. And now there are Democrats who are saying, you know, make the Republicans beat up on each other. I'm not sure that's such a wise thing, because you might end up with a Republican candidate who could do some serious damage. So, but we'll see. Jeff in Fort Myers, Florida. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A while ago I heard a comment by Michael Moore that the big money is not really jumping in on this Republican primary, as crazy as it is, because they've already got their man in the White House. And I just wondered what your thoughts would be.
Well, you know, you might. 4 years ago, most of the Wall Street money went to Barack Obama. And then you know, he started, when he proposed the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and stood behind that legislation, and this was like about a year and a half ago, I read these stories on the air. The New York Times had an article headlined, Wall Street Reconsiders Obama. And they started pulling money out of the Obama campaign, and Obama's super PAC had $58,000 in it as of, you know, a week or so ago. $58,000. I mean, you know, not even a million, not even a tenth of a million, you know, 0.05 of $1 million. And Mitt Romney's had raised over $30 million, almost all of it from Wall Street billionaires. So, no, I don't think that Barack Obama is Wall Street's guy in the White House any longer. And or if he ever was, frankly. I think, you know, George Bush was the one who pushed through the big bailout. And, you know, obviously he's having to make some compromises. But I think the real guy who's Wall Street's guy is Mitt Romney right now. And Jeb Bush, I mean, you know, the Bush family, the Bush dynasty, it's a banking dynasty. Prescott Bush, he was a banker. He was, it's where the family made their money. Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, thanks for being there and doing what you do, Tom.
Sure.
I just want to respond to this notion that Jeb Bush could be president and be any kind of a successful president in any sense of the word. I think it's possible for him to come to political power again. Again, I say the Bush people, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the American people are smarter than that. I think there's been a lot of lessons learned that aren't even being talked about right now.
Have you ever seen Jeb Bush speak?
Oh, yeah. I've been real familiar with the whole political thing.
I mean, he comes across so friendly, so reasonable, so smooth. He's not at all like his brother. He doesn't even have a Texas accent. He doesn't play that game.
Yeah, but he's a Bush. He's a Bush, and we know what's going on now, and we know how all this is connected now, and there's a lot of people who just aren't even talking about what's going on.
Well, maybe you and I do, but I would never underestimate the power of advertising.
Millions, you and me and millions of other Americans and people all over the world, and the whole world is watching, Tom.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
Well, the whole world was watching in 2000, and we had an election stolen by the Supreme Court and stolen by the guy who was running's brother in his own state. And
let me just suggest,
there's very little discussion.
He could come to power quickly and subversively, and he can disappear just as quickly.
I'm not even going to go there, Bob. Jonathan in Hadley, Mass., listening to WHMP. Hey, Jonathan, what's your thoughts on this?
Here's my question, Tom, is... Don't you think if it were possible for a moderate to win the Republican nomination, like, for instance, let's say Chuck Hagel, it would have happened already? Or it could it doesn't seem like the party's in such disarray. It doesn't seem like it could happen no matter how much money.
Here's the point. Because you've got this phony AstroTurf Tea Party that has risen up, you know, with money from the Koch brothers and from multimillionaire lobbyist Dick Armey, you have this, and you've got, evangelism going on for Ayn Rand and the objectivism and libertarianism and the whole Rand and Ron Paul faction. You've got basically the crazy wing of the Republican Party driving the primary process. And so no Republican who is sufficiently moderate that they could actually win the general election this year anyway, with all the crazies out there, can successfully make it through the primary process. So how does the Republican Party make sure that the candidate who's going to go up against Barack Obama doesn't have to engage in the primaries and tarnish himself by, as Mitt Romney did yesterday, flip-flopping on the Blunt Amendment? No, I don't support it. Yes, I do support it. Within 30 minutes. You know, how do they do that? The way that they do that is they force a brokered convention. So as much money as Romney can get from the billionaires on Wall Street and as much money of his own money that he throws in, they're going to keep throwing money at Santorum or throwing money at Gingrich or throwing money at Ron Paul even to try, although Ron Paul seems to be helping Mitt Romney, to try to get this thing to the convention so it'll be a brokered convention. And if what comes out of that is a Jeb Bush for president candidacy, which is something that I'm not predicting, but I'd put 40% odds on, then you've got a relatively short period of time to drive up that guy's negatives and plenty of time for a good, healthy advertising campaign to sell into the American people, because they really won't start paying attention to politics until September, which is when he would be stepping onto the national stage. It concerns me, Jonathan. It seriously does. Thanks a lot for the call. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Bush said to an audience in Dallas last Thursday, "I used to be a conservative, and I watch these debates, and I wonder."
Haven't you heard the rumor?
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, Mary in Abilene, Kansas. Hey, Mary, you have some thoughts on Jeb? I find this fascinating that Thursday Jeb Bush gave a speech in Dallas, and he said, "I used to be a conservative." Talk about walking away from the Tea Party.
Well, actually, am I on?
You are.
I've never called. Okay, this is the first time I've ever done this.
Well, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Jeb, he's got way too many. His family, there's just too many skeletons in his family. I don't think they'd want him to run.
You know, that's what we said about Reagan in 1980. Oh, he's been divorced. You know, he had an affair with Nancy. He never goes to church. He's talked about bombing the Soviet Union. We called him Ronnie Reagan. He ended free public education in California. Just before Kent State, he basically said that the kids should be shot I mean, you know, Reagan had enormous amounts of baggage, and the Democrats wanted him to be the candidate to go up against Jimmy Carter. And look what happened. I would
Good
be very
point.
Careful about and again, George W. Bush,
oh,
for
no,
that matter.
I would not want him running against Obama. I think it'd be, yeah.
Neither do I. I mean, you've got a dynastic power here. With,
he would have a good chance.
Yeah, with tentacles into every part of American industry. And I mean, you know, Prescott Bush was first elected to the Senate in 1952. I mean, these guys have been around for a long time. They know where the bodies are buried. They know where the levers of power are. They know how to get support. I think that Jeb Bush would present a real significant challenge to President Obama. And thank you for the call, Mary. I thank you very much. I had mentioned the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monsters. Jeff in Phoenix, listening at KPHX, has some thoughts on that. Hey, Jeff.
Well, Tom, it's not so much my thoughts as I'd like you to expand on it. I'm a follower. I don't know if you say I'm part of a church or not, but I'm a recovering Catholic. And, the public needs to know more about it.
Yeah, well, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster has a website. It's a fairly extensive website. You can just Google it. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's very, very easy to find. And the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster was started by a guy who I think wanted to push back on the religion and global warming and church, you know, religion in government and all that kind of thing. But it has become quite an organization, and a lot of, you know, people, they call themselves Pastafarians. And one of their arguments is that, global warming is happening because the pirates are going away, and not the bad pirates in Somalia, the good yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum pirates. And, you can read it all about it on their website. We've actually had the head Pastafarian on this show. It's been a couple of years. We need to get him back on again. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. We'll see where this goes. We'll see where this goes. Catherine in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Well, I called about the Blunt Amendment that just went down to defeat, Thank goodness. But I called 5 senators this morning and told them, you know what, this is feudalism.
Sure.
This is to whom the land belongs or the company belongs or whatever, the religion belongs and the health care belongs.
Well, what it's saying is basically that the employees are the property of the owners of the business.
Exactly.
That
so
they're
we're
the
all serfs.
Serfs
now, and that connects with all this other stuff about, you know, right to work for less and no unions and everything else that they do.
I agree. There are people who say, oh, this is about abortion or contraception or religion. I don't think so. I think it's about power. And that's the issue, is the power that corporations have in America and how much more power is the government going to give them. Are the so-called small government conservatives going to give them? And here's the rub. Every time you diminish the strength and size of government, you increase the strength and size of these large transnational corporations, because government is the flywheel. It's the balancing power to them. And that's why the billionaires, that's why the right-wingers call themselves small government conservatives, because they want to have big corporations running America rather than small rather than any kind of government. Catherine, thank you. Very, very well said. And much appreciate that. Jim in White Salmon, Washington. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, I'm been pondering this question for a long time. If President Obama and even the police forces around the country have to take an oath to protect the Constitution or to protect the people,
yes,
why aren't they upheld to that?
Well, there is no enforcement mechanism for that oath. The only enforcement mechanism for that oath is impeachment. And there's not much appetite for that. Although you could argue that that's what's happening to Scott Walker. That's what might happen to the governor of Michigan. That's what might happen to, I mean, there's a number of governors and a number of politicians around the country, Rick Scott in Michigan. There's a number of them that this may happen to. So we'll see. But I think that the fact that they've taken an oath to Grover Norquist, a multimillionaire lobbyist on K Street. I've got some Grover Norquist clips for you here in a few minutes or in the next hour or two. Joe in Los Angeles. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Yes, about the Bush family. This family have no shame. No shame whatsoever. Their hands in the oil companies. They even sabotaged McCain. McCain should be the president of this country. And they sabotaged him, and they put this... regime called Obama, which is, you know, he's not even really a black man.
Oh,
he doesn't know the suffering of the black people.
Okay, Joe. All right. It's Tim in Dunwoody, Georgia. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just called Senator Isaacson and Senator Shambliss' office about the Blunt Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them about why would they vote to impose Sharia law on me, an Irish Catholic American citizen? The reason being, according to the Blunt Amendment, if an employer, which happens to be Muslim, and I once worked for a company that was held by Muslims from Malaysia, why would they vote for that?
Because Muslim,
totally freaked it.
Because under Sharia law, you can't use birth control.
Exactly. And so they're basically voting to allow, you know, Muslim-held companies to, now, I'm a progressive, but I wanted to find out why these guys were doing this.
What'd
they
say?
They freaked. They're going to have people call me back. My congressman is Tom Price. Their office hung up on me.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question. You know, if they voted for the Blunt Amendment, why are you voting for Sharia law? I love it. Tim, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks. Thanks for watching us down there in Georgia. Up next, imagine life in America with no water, no showers, no toilets. Yeah, that's what the Republicans want.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Imagine life with no water right here in the United States of America. You wake up, you can't take a shower. You can't brush your teeth. You can't use the bathroom. You can't cook. You can't clean. You can't do laundry. You really can't do anything. Luckily, right now, this isn't really a problem facing most Americans, but it might be soon because it's not just our roads and bridges that are deteriorating across the nation. It's also our water pipes. This new study just came out from the American Water Works Association. It says that America's underground water pipe infrastructure is rapidly deteriorating, needs to be revamped to the tune of $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Most of the water pipes that we have right now were laid down more than 50 years ago. Some of them more than 100 years ago. Some of them more than 150 years ago. And today, after more than 30 years of starve-the-beast Reaganomics that didn't invest a dime in our infrastructure, those pipes are way past the end of most of their lifespans. Now, the study that looked at the water also looked at wastewater pipes, and they said, same problem, same situation, and another $1 trillion. So here we are, the richest nation on the planet, with rotting third-world water pipes underneath us. I mean, that's not all of it. Of course, our entire infrastructure, from our roads to our schools to our dams, desperately need repair or replacement. The American Society of Civil Engineers put out a report card on America's infrastructure. Guess what our grade was? A D. But just for our water and septic, nationwide, estimated five-year investment, $2.2 trillion, which would put millions, possibly as much as tens of millions of people to work like that. But instead, with this abysmal grade on infrastructure, the United States now ranks 13th in the world when it comes to infrastructure investments. So what does all this mean? Well, first of all, in my humble opinion, means we need to take back those trillions, yes, trillions with a T, trillions of dollars that Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, and even Obama have given to millionaires and billionaires and giant transnational corporations in the form of historically low tax rates. Nobody has tried to raise tax rates back to where they were when Reagan came into office. 74% on the top and a corporate tax rate that actually worked. And once we get back to tax rates, like we had during the Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, and Carter years, by the way, of the greatest growth and prosperity in American history. If we were to get back to those tax rates, then we could use that money to rebuild this country. Because when we had that tax rate, we were building this country. Eisenhower built the interstate highway system with that tax rate. And by the way, rebuilding the infrastructure of America would work out really well because investments in infrastructure put millions of Americans back to work building things like roads, schools, and power plants. Our economy is begging for this sort of stimulus. So why isn't it happening? Because the Republicans in Congress are blocking it. President Obama and the Democrats are saying, hey, we need to fix this stuff. It's like, you know, you own a car and the water pump's going out. Well, the Republicans would say, well, let's just run it without a water pump. Well, what happens? It the engine locks up and freezes. Then they go, oh, gee, look at that. It's broken. We need a new car, a Republican car. And this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to say they're trying to run our economy into the ground so they can say we need a new president. Rather than investments, Republicans want austerity. At a time when the government really has to spend money to make America competitive again. And countries all over the world are doing this. We're like 16th in the world in terms of infrastructure investments. At a time when this is like critical to make our businesses competitive, to make our businesses functional, to get water to your home. The Republicans want the government to be a tightwad. Unless, of course, you know, there is an exception. When the Republicans get a phone call from their paymasters in the oil industry, like the Koch brothers or ExxonMobil, then all of a sudden, rather than updating the water pipelines, they want to build a new oil pipeline. But back to the infrastructure. Rather than renovate public schools, they want to close public schools and let for-profit corporations make money educating our kids. Rather than fix 75,000 structurally deficient bridges. Yes, that's how many bridges in America. The government itself, the government engineers have looked at and said, this thing is going to fall down. These are structurally deficient. Their phrase. 75,000 of them in the United States. Millions of them, tens of millions of Americans drive across them every day. Instead of fixing them, the Republicans want to give massive tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. And last time I checked, the millionaires and billionaires are not investing their fortunes in building bridges across America. At least the right-wing ones are not. But most disturbingly, beyond political ideology about the role of government, Republicans are against these critical infrastructure investments because they do not want this economy to improve. They know. Remember Mr. Turtle? Mitch McConnell? The day after President Obama was elected, he said, you know, the number one job of he's the leader of the Republicans in the United States Senate. He said our number, and they were a minority, but they had the ability to filibuster legislation to block it, which they did in numbers and in ways that have never happened in the history of this country. Because the day after Obama was elected president, Mitch McConnell said our number one job is going to be to make sure he's a one-term president. And he repeated that. He repeated that on Meet the Press just, you know, in the last year. Here he is.
Well, that is true. That's my single most important political goal, along with every active Republican in the country.
There you go. Yeah. Make sure that President Obama is a one-term president. They know, these guys know, that if they pass the legislation that Nancy Pelosi got out of the House, the legislation that President Obama is pushing for to move America into the 21st century, with things like new smart energy grids like other countries are building, or new water pipes like most countries, like they just kind of maintain them, you know, new high-speed rail systems. We don't have one. Then millions of Americans would be put back to work instantly, and our economy would boom. And who would get the credit for it? President Obama. And that is unacceptable to the Republican Party, whose first objective is to make President Obama a one-term president. So it's really straightforward. I mean, listen to these guys on the right.
Oh, it's all about, we got a budget deficit. We can't spend money.
We had a far worse budget deficit after World War II. How do we get out of it? Eisenhower borrowed money and built the interstate highway system. Commerce boomed. More people had paychecks. They were paying taxes. Tax collections went up. As a result of it, companies were making money. They paid taxes. Tax collections went up. And we grew our way out of the 127% of GDP debt that we had after World War II. Abraham Lincoln did the same thing after the Civil War. We came out of the Civil War massively in debt. What did he do? He built the railroad, the interstate railroad system. Americans need to ask ourselves what sort of infrastructure we deserve in the wealthiest nation on earth. Do we deserve a grade D infrastructure like we have? If so, then yeah, keep the Republicans in charge of the purse strings in Congress. But if you think we deserve a grade A infrastructure like the rest of the developing world is building and the rest of the developed world has, then now's the time to hold the Republicans in Congress accountable. Now's the time to get out there and get active. Now's the time to say, I'm going to become a precinct committee person. I'm going to show up and volunteer. I'm going to participate. Or if you don't want to get into partisan politics, and I absolutely understand that, now is the time to join movement politics, to show up at your local Occupy organization, you know, Occupy movement, to join Progressive Democrats for America, pdamerica.org, to join progressivemajority.org, Ben Cohen's organization and Jerry Greenfield's organization, to join Howard Dean's organization, democracyforamerica.com. Excuse me. There are so many opportunities to get involved, and we've got to do it now.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, Geeky Science and your calls. Your thoughts on these many things I've ranted about. Also, what does Ann Coulter say about Jeb Bush being president? I got to tell you about this.
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
Oh, it's our Kiki Science Moment. Every week we dedicate 2 or 3 minutes to my favorite topic, science. You ever heard of MRSA? Methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA? MRSA is the flesh-eating bacteria that, for example, killed Jim Henson, the guy who founded the Muffets. It is running through hospitals around the world. It is a major problem. You know where it first appeared? The CC398 strain of MRSA first appeared in 2003 in the United States in pigs, cattle, and poultry. These antibiotic-resistant bugs, and not just MRSA, there's others, are the result of feeding livestock, and this is a new study where genome detective work was done to determine where are these antibiotic-resistant bugs coming from. This was published in Science, the publication of the American Academy for the Advancement of Sciences, and one of the most prestigious science publications in the world. And Lance Prince, director of the Center for Food Microbiology and Environmental Health at the Translational Genomics Research Institute in Flagstaff, TGen, in Flagstaff, Arizona, describes how a human strain of MRSA started out as a drug-defeatable bug and then transferred into the pig population, where it developed resistance to two common forms of antibiotic. Then the newly potent antibiotic-resistant staph jumped back into humans, and researchers traced its evolutionary history by examining 89 genomes from humans, turkeys, chickens, and pigs from 19 countries. He said it's like watching the birth of a superbug. And it's all coming out of our factory farming industry, giving these animals all these antibiotics, particularly pigs. We are forcing evolution. I mean, it's really incredible. I'll just leave it at that. It's time for us to rethink factory farms in a big way, because they're killing us. In fact, one of the things that they point out is that nearly half of all the meat in the U.S. food supply is infected with CC398. That's MRSA, with the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, flesh-eating bacteria. Half, according to this article. It is in nearly half of all meat in the U.S. food supply, according to the American Society for Microbiology. Most of the time, you can kill it by cooking your food thoroughly. But what happens when somebody takes the meat out of the wrapper from the store and puts it on the counter and then, you know, does whatever they do to it, toss it in the frying pan to cook it, which kills off the bacteria, but what's still on the counter? And then they put a head of lettuce there and they chop up the lettuce for the salad. And then bingo. So, anyhow, enough of that rant. Back to your thoughts and mine on some of these issues. Chris in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, let me hear me.
Yeah.
Hi. I wanted to respond to what you were saying about the Reagan tax cuts and how great everything was before the the Reaganomics. And, you know, the inflation, it was 10%. The unemployment was 10% before Reagan got in there. And in 1971, we were going to lose all of our gold if we were to honor the dollar commitments that we had sent overseas.
Yeah, I know. Nixon took us off the gold standard. So what? You know, when Reagan did his tax cut in 1981 or 82, our unemployment rate went up to 12%. 12% under Reagan. Reagan raised taxes on the middle class more than any other president in history. To this day, Reagan raised taxes on the middle class. Reagan cut taxes on the very rich more than any other president in history, including Harding, who was the first guy who tried it in 1921, dropped it from 91% down to 25%. But in total net dollars, you know, Reagan beat him hugely. Reagan tripled our national debt, which had been pretty meaningless. But the most important statistic, and you should look this up, I encourage you to look this up if you want to be an apologist for Ronald Reagan, is that look at a graph that shows worker productivity and worker wages and CEO wages and corporate income starting anywhere after 1870, after the Civil War, all the way up to today. And what you will see is from 1870 to 1980, as worker productivity went up, workers' wages went up, which created the middle class. And as workers' wages went up, CEO wages went up too, but they went up at about the same rate. So you had CEOs making 30 times what workers were making from the 1900s right up until the 1980s. And then Reagan came along with Reaganomics, and all of a sudden, worker productivity kept going up. Worker wages flatlined, and they have been flat since 1981. In fact, they are lower than they used to be, arguably, because it used to be, now you know, they talk about household income. Average household income in the United States is $44,000, which is about where it was when Reagan came into office. What they don't point out is that average worker income in the United States is only $26,000, which is half of what it was when Reagan came into office, because now it takes two people working in the family to maintain the same standard of living that you could do with one person in the family in 1980. Where has all that money gone? The spread, the difference, the differential between the increased productivity and the worker wages, it has gone to CEOs who are now making 500 times what the average worker makes, and to stockholders like Mitt Romney who make 30, 40 million bucks a year sitting on their butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive and paying a maximum 15% income tax.
Tom, I wasn't trying to be an apologist for Ronald Reagan, but I'm saying what you're proposing we do now is just what another form of what Reagan did. It's stimulus. I voted for Obama, and I would never vote for him again. I've become a libertarian, and the libertarian.
Oh man, that's so sad, Chris. The libertarianism will destroy America. You know, I realize it's very appealing to think let's just decriminalize pot and prostitution. Yeah. Cool. But all the libertarian policies, you want to do away with Social Security, you want to do away with Medicare, you want to do away with all public education, turn everything over to the big corporations, you want to turn our Social Security over to Wall Street, you want to turn our Medicare program over to big health insurance companies and our schools to private education companies? That's insane.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the Limbaugh Alert. Who did he call? What? Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here with big news. We're moving. Starting March 12th, the Tom Hartman Program will be live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 3 Pacific Time. Welcome back to the program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say no. And neither is GE and neither is... We could go through the list, right?
Crimes, making money, selling lies. Oh. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
It's our Rush Alert theme song, yes, indeed. And here is our Limbaugh Alert for the day.
The college co-ed Susan Fluke, who goes before a congressional committee and essentially says that she must be paid to have sex. What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right? Makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. She's having so much sex she can't afford the contraception. She wants you and me and the taxpayers to pay her to have sex. What does that make us? We're the pimps.
Of course, you know, she never said anything of the type. This is a complete distortion. And this is the kind of stuff that makes me, it just frankly astounds me when people call in and use Limbaugh's lines, you know, like it just blows my mind. Anyhow, Jeb Bush, is he going to be our next Republican candidate? Jim in Sullivan, Illinois, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I really like your books, and I'm reading my third book.
Oh, well, thank you.
And it's Screwed.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned Jeb Bush in a book, which I didn't know. He colluded with Enron to privatize the Everglades.
That's
if
correct.
If he gets in the White House, is he going to privatize the White House, too?
I think he's going to privatize anything he can get his hands on. He's you know, part of a dynastic family. He has this very friendly, moderate face and very inclusive and all that kind of stuff. And he talks softly and he's actually very, very smart. I mean, he was the smart one. He was the one that George Herbert and Barbara wanted to be running for president in 2000. And Karl Rove outmaneuvered them and got George W. in there instead. But Jeb was the one that was supposed to be president. And I believe that the family still thinks that, you know, I believe that this is a family, the Bush family, that believes that they should run everything, that they should be in charge. And if they're not in charge, they're going to be in charge of the people who are in charge, which is why they sucked up to Bill Clinton as soon as he became president and why they brought him onto the board of some of their organizations after he left the White House. And on it goes. I mean, and not just Bill Clinton, any politician. It's not Democratic or Republican politics. It is all about the Bushes running things. So that's my take on it, Jim. Thanks a lot for the call, but Craig in Portland. Hey, Craig, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
Like your show. Hey,
thank you.
Hey, I got a comment about your MRSA. You think that's a Jewish plot to take over the world?
Oh, come on.
Hey, as far as Bush goes, I think if Obama's playing chess here, that he always holds that the war crimes thing in his hand. And I was listening to Joel Clark the other day, had some concerns that Romney registered in his son's basement to vote in Massachusetts and may have committed voter fraud.
Yeah, so, there's that story is out there, and yeah, that story is out there and has been for some time. And I think it's true. By the way, I think it's true, which concerns me. John, listening on WTFE in Philadelphia. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, I'm a Pastafarian minister, and I was just
You're a Pastafarian minister?
Yes.
In the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Yes, I am.
Wow. Okay. Tell us about it.
So what you were saying before, though, that the Somali pirates didn't count, but they actually do. That's actually the justification for the proof of the cause of global warming. Somalia has the most pirates and the lowest carbon emissions. So that's how we prove that. Yes. So, I just wanted to let you know that. Also, I just want to add, I'm really happy to hear so many people from Pennsylvania calling, especially considering all the stuff that Corbett's trying to do right now. It's great to see we have more progressives than I thought.
Yeah, there you go. And your crazy governor. Thanks a lot for calling, John. I appreciate it. It's strange stuff going on in Pennsylvania. Some very strange stuff going on. Ralph in Gainesville, Florida. Hey, Ralph, what's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, Tom? All the things that I've heard that you talk about, I've been on the phone here for about an hour, and I'd like to say so many things, but what I will say is I can't find anything I disagree with you on, and I don't know why in the world you're not an advisor for President Obama, or at least run for office yourself, you know?
I do two things really well, Ralph, I believe, and I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but, you know, it seems like I'm successful at them. One is being a talk show host, and one is being an author, and I love both those things. And the idea of being a politician, particularly in today's world where you have to spend 60, 70, 80% of your time begging for money, is something that just horrifies me. I was, in Columbus, Ohio last weekend. I was in Chicago the weekend before that. Met a number of people who are running for public office, local, smaller offices. They're not quite as caught up in the money thing. And, you know, who are running because they believe in what they're doing. And every single one of them, I said, you are so brave. I so honor you. For being willing to run for public office. I don't have that kind of courage, and I'll just come right out and say it.
Well, I want to say something. I ran the politics for the operating engineers in South Florida for almost 20 years, and I was a delegate with EFL-CIO for another 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned down the opportunity to be groomed for Congress myself because I saw this crap coming 20 years ago. I wouldn't want to be a congressman right
yeah.
now, you know?
Oh, because, yeah. It's terrible.
But let me just say about Jeb Bush. I did an article for the Building Trades magazine back in the early 80s.
And, now, you're a Florida resident.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I did an article. It was called The Right Man for the Job, M-A-N-N, Barbara Mann. Jeb Bush, one of the things he's done, he could never be elected unless he has a massive anti-conspiracy committee to you know, spin everything. He hired Barbara Mann out of Pennsylvania when she was had to leave Pennsylvania under a threat of indictment for rigging the Pennsylvania lottery, mm-hmm. and he put her to work in Florida to run the Florida State Lottery. And they weren't rigging to win; they were rigging to lose because the ticket sales goes up when they, you know, when the pot goes up.
Right.
But he also invested millions of dollars of union members, law enforcement, teachers in Florida, into Enron before it went under. Shortly to try and beef it up with their money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember back when the election, when he promised his brother the state of Florida, who lost, by the way, we know now that Gore actually won. But yep. that aside. He had all the roadblocks set up for the minority communities where people couldn't get to vote without getting stopped and checked for suspended license or no insurance or bench warrants or, you know.
Right.
This is the kind of guy Jeb Bush is.
Right. And my point is that that kind of guy in this kind of dirty political environment can win an election.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah.
He did
take Florida for his brother.
Well, I tell you what, Gore stepped down too quickly, but I think they've proven now that Bush lost Florida and Ohio. But you know, that's all water over the dam now.
Yeah, it is.
But I agree with everything you say, Tom. I haven't been watching you as much as I used to because I've had some problems in the family the last month or so.
Sorry,
but
yeah.
I just turned you on this morning to get away from the other damn news. And I tell you what, I've been sitting here for an hour thinking, my Lord, why aren't you in politics? You know what I'm saying?
Well, thank you for your kind
words,
Ralph. I got to move along, but thank you for your kind words. I appreciate it. Carla in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Carla, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. You're my new hero.
Oh, my.
And I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
I just wish that everybody in the United States would watch it. But what I wanted to say was that Bush and Cheney families are buying up land all across the world with water rights on it.
Yes, particularly
so buying up all the water rights.
Particularly in, was it Ecuador? Or
yes, I think so.
Or what used to, it's the country that used to be called Patagonia, I believe. I think it's Ecuador. It's one of those South American countries. Yeah, they bought hundreds of thousands of acres, and the original conspiracy theory was when the Bush family made this investment was that they're planning on, you know, after destroying the United States, they're planning on going there. Or if George W. gets indicted for war crimes, they're going to go there. And then it turns out that there's an enormous amount of water on that land and that water is, you know, necessary for people who are like downhill and downstream. And so it's just like a really, really good investment. Carla, thank you for the call. You're spot on. It is it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. Marty in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Marty, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Regarding your comments at the beginning of the hour regarding the growth in our country from 1870 to 1980 the infrastructure being built up, how can you get your message to Congress other than through Bernie Sanders so that all the Republicans can hear what you have to say and understand it and try and act upon it?
Well, I do my best. I mean, you know, first of all, we're on the air on two radio stations here in Washington, D.C. That helps. But I think the most important way that any commentator can get their message out, you know, whether it's somebody who writes op-eds or somebody who writes blogs or somebody who writes books or somebody who's doing a talk show, is if there are other people who agree with that point of view, those people will share that information with their members of Congress. In fact, Senator Sanders he wrote a cover letter and gave a copy of my book, Rebooting the American Dream, which is 11, you know, it's an 11-point policy prescription to restore democracy in America, gave a copy of that to every one of the 100 members of the United States Senate or the other 99. That blew my mind when Bernie was willing to do that, to sign that letter and send them. And I didn't ask for that. I mean, it was just amazing. And and Marty, thanks for the call. So I think that the way to get the word out is for you to get the word out. Right? If you agree with what I have to say or anybody else, call your member of Congress and say, hey, have you thought about this? You know, the Blunt Amendment. Do we really want Sharia law in the United States? That actually wasn't mine. It was one of my callers. I think it's kind of cool. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Former Republican Congressman Bob Ney is going to be with us with the Talk Radio News Service right after this. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, oh, time for our Borowitz alert, our cheesy news alert, actually, courtesy of Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. And what some political observers are calling a possible gaffe on the part of the former Massachusetts governor, Mitt Romney, told a crowd gathered for a World Wrestling Entertainment event in Ohio today, quote, "I love poor people. They taste like chicken," end quote. After an awkward silence from the crowd and a smattering of boos, Mr. Romney added, "Really, you should try them someday. They go nice with sincere." The GOP frontrunner's latest faux pas came just 2 days after Mitt Romney's big win in the Michigan primary, in which he narrowly defeated a mental patient in a sweater vest. In Michigan, Mr. Romney had spoken to workers at a GM plant saying, "I love cars. I'm like a car. I was conceived in Michigan and my microcircuitry is from Japan." In other campaign news, former Senator Rick Santorum addressed the controversy over contraception, telling a crowd in Dayton, "The best form of contraception will always be underwear with a picture of me on the crotch." Ba-dum-bump. Thanks, Andy Borowitz. Oh, man. John in Round Hill, Virginia. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Good, Tom. I wanted to thank you.
For what?
Overall, the big business decisions, I've decided to quit smoking. I'm not giving Philip Morris another penny.
Well, good on you. That's very wise.
Thank you. It's all on you. And there is some bad news, though.
Okay. Before you go to the bad news, John, let me give you, if I may, a little bit of advice. Actually, not an advice. A story that you can tell yourself. And that I have found works really, really well with people who are trying to quit smoking. And I was a smoker myself once, and so was Louise. We've been through this. We know what it is. Is instead of thinking of it or speaking of it as not smoking anymore or stopping smoking, start thinking of it and start visualizing it as breathing fresh air. You are now becoming a fresh air breather. You're no longer going to inhale polluted air. You're going to inhale fresh air, and that's going to make your body stronger and healthier, and that's a good thing. And every time you take a breath, you're inhaling fresh air. Okay?
You know what? I agree with you totally.
Yeah. It's a great mental reframe.
Every person that wants to quit is, don't tell anybody. Keep that to yourself, because people put pressure on you like you would not imagine.
Yep.
But I have kids. I have a wife. I never told them.
Yeah, you just do it.
I just did it by myself.
You know,
and I'm 10 days clean now, and you're right. I breathe fresh air.
There you go. That's great.
The bad news is I registered you as a voter in my district.
You're kidding.
Oh, no. Voter fraud is really prevalent in America.
Well, that's not voter fraud. That's registration fraud. It's only voter fraud if you or I show up and vote, which I don't think is going to happen.
Oh, 8 districts for you.
Okay. John.
Who do you want me to vote for, man? I love you, dude.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John. It's, you know, this is what, what's his name? Who's the idiot who does these videos? He, you know, took down Acorn by James O'Keefe. Thanks, Jacob. You know, this is what he did. He went in and he tried to register as somebody who was dead, you know, and first of all, if you did that, what was it? Jim was the guy, our caller's name. If you did that, Jim, you committed a crime, for which you could be prosecuted. But secondly, it's not voter fraud. It's registration fraud. Voter fraud is when you actually vote. And that happens so rare in the United States that you are more likely to be struck by lightning than for there to be voter fraud. The Bush administration spent $74 million trying to find voter fraud in the United States. They asked all the federal prosecutors in the country to go after voter fraud, and several of them, you know, refused. They said, this is silly. This is, you know, and there was a 4 or 5 year campaign by the Bush administration to prove that voter fraud existed. They couldn't find it. What they found was that Ann Coulter had registered to vote at her real estate agent's office because she didn't want the public to know the address of where she really lived, which is a reasonable thing in my mind. What they found was that Mitt Romney registered to vote in his son's basement in his son's house in Massachusetts. so that he could say that he was a Massachusetts resident rather than California. And maybe that was tax fraud. I don't know. But voter fraud now. Voter fraud doesn't happen. Election fraud happens. Like, you know, what do you call it? Jeb Bush saying to Catherine Harris, Catherine, take 80,000 African Americans off the voting rolls in Florida. I don't care how you do it. And so she gets this Texas company to take a list of Texas felons and compare them with a list of registered voters in African-American communities in Florida. And a lot of people have very similar names, and it didn't even have to be the same name. Instead of Jim Johnson, it could be Jay Johnson, J. Period Johnson, James Johnson, James Johnson III, whatever. In all cases, they got knocked off the roll. 80,000 African-Americans taken off the rolls. To the best of my knowledge, that lawsuit by the ACLU is still going on, or not the ACLU, the NAACP, is still going on. Mike in Manistee, Michigan. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm calling about the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And all our crumbling bridges and roads.
Yep.
Well, the GOP's always spouting off about how President Obama has all these regulations, the EPA and whatnot. I think he should put his regulations to work, and if there's a bridge that needs repair, shut it down.
Yeah, there you go.
Shutting them down.
I'm with you. Some of them actually have been shut down, you know, and it's causing some significant inconveniences. There's one in the southern New York State, edge of Vermont there on the southern end of Lake Champlain that is causing people to have to drive like an extra 40 miles because this bridge got shut down.
Really?
Yeah, so, you know, it's starting to happen, and the other tragedy is what happened when you had, you know, the bridge
Minnesota.
In Minneapolis St. Paul crash. I mean, that was a real disaster. I mean, this you know, 30 some odd people died.
Shut them down.
And Tim Pawlenty was the governor. He was like, no, we don't want no stinking infrastructure. Oh, whoops. And that's the way it goes. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. How much time do we have, Jacob? 10 seconds. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not gonna. Well. Tom in Palos Hills, Illinois, you want to say something about John Locke real quick? No? Okay, I guess not. Got to listen to your phone, not your television or your radio. Anyhow, we will be back in just a moment. Mike Brownfield is going to drop by. He is the Assistant Director of Strategic Communications over at the Heritage Foundation. And this should be interesting. And then Tony Trupiano is going to drop by. He's the host of First Shift with Tony Trupiano on WDTW, our Detroit affiliate, and an old friend. And we will discuss many interesting things, particularly the stimulus dollars.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mike Brownfield's on the line with us. He is an attorney and the Assistant Director of Strategic Communications over at the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
You wrote this piece about the city of Troy, Michigan, priding itself on being the city of tomorrow today, and also stimulus dollars not welcome here.
You got it.
Okay. I'm assuming that Troy, Michigan, is run by Republicans.
Well, their city council has a majority Republican on the council. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so this is part of the ongoing process where we've seen in blue states across the United States where they've actually increased spending, in many cases increased taxes. GDP goes up, unemployment goes down in 25 blue states. In 24 red states where they've said no to stimulus dollars, where they've cut spending, where they've cut taxes, their GDP has gone down and their unemployment has gone up.
No, what you're looking at is a city that was offered a supposed gift of $8 million to build a transit center to connect it to the city of Detroit, to Chicago, Amtrak rail.
Right.
And at the end of the day, they were going to have to start forking out more money every year in order to pay for the upkeep.
$31,000 a year.
$31,000 a year to pay for the upkeep of the station.
So they turned down $8.5 million because they didn't want to come up with $31,000 a year.
Well, you know what? $31,000 a year may not sound like a lot to you, but you know what?
It doesn't sound a lot to any city. Come on.
Actually, no, it is to this city because they actually last year considered eliminating their library, their museum, and their nature
center. That's a hell of a lot more than $31,000.
hey, it's one piece of the puzzle. $31,000, maybe one bit. I'd like to.
You know, if they had a rail system, if Troy had a rail system that connected them to the Amtrak corridor, people might start coming to Troy.
No, they might see their economy
boom, because that's what happens. I mean, look at what happens to property values whenever a highway exit ramp is put on.
Tom,
what happens?
Well,
property values go up, right?
Troy already has a train. There's already a train station there, and you know how many people it serves a day? 66.
So let's upgrade it.
They have three trains there. So this is just free money for the sake of, hey, here's $8 million. Let's build a transit center for a train system that nobody even uses.
Well, maybe people would use
it.
Maybe people would use it if it was fast and new and really worked.
It's not going to be fast or new. It's Amtrak. Amtrak is neither fast nor new. The average speed on Amtrak between Detroit and Chicago is 64 miles an hour.
Yeah, because the rails are privatized. Because the lines, they have to lease rail lines that are owned by private corporations. I think that they should be renationalized so that we can say, you know, we're going to bring ourselves up to the standards of the rest of the world.
Well, so the president has $200 million for Michigan to upgrade those rails, and you know how much faster it's going to make them go? 4 miles an hour faster. $200 million to shave off 15 minutes from the commute.
It's a hell of a lot. It's a hell of a lot of jobs. And Mike, I get it that Republicans.
It's not jobs.
No, when you put people to work on the railroad, you know, putting down new tracks so that the trains don't go rocking from side to side. I mean, here.
That's a fantasy. The AP and the Congressional Research Service have both reported that this idea that stimulus dollars spent on infrastructure spending, it does not create jobs. That's not me. That's not the Heritage Foundation. That's the Associated Press. That's the Congressional Research.
Well, that might be the Associated Press quoting you guys, but here's what the National Association of State Budget Offices says, that those states, you know, over the last 3 years that have been spending stimulus funds have seen a 2.2% decrease in their unemployment rate, a 1.4% increase in private employment, and a 0.5% real economic growth since the start of the recession. In contrast, I'm quoting from them, in contrast, states that cut spending saw on average a 1% point increase in the unemployment rate, a 2.1% loss of private employment, and a 2.9% real economic contraction relative to the national trend. So I would say that the Republican New Jersey that says no thanks, don't want the rail tunnel, Chris Christie, Troy, Michigan, Republican suburb, says, no, we don't want the $8.5 million. What they're really saying is, we don't want to take the risk of putting people to work and Obama getting credit for an improved economy. We want to crash the economy for partisan purposes so we can blame it on the president.
No, these are people who have a fiscal fiduciary duty to run their cities, run their states and towns in a fiscally responsible manner. They can't keep pumping out millions and millions of dollars to build in California, hey, a $98 billion train system to go from L.A. to San Francisco. There's not the money for it. The state, which is now run by what? Answer my question. A Democrat is raising taxes in order to pay for more spending to build this rail system.
And because they know it'll be a good investment.
And they're cutting social services. They're cutting colleges. California can't afford to build this thing. And they're saying.
And that is in large part because of a Koch brothers, ALEC funded, not just attempt. Actually, it was done. Legislative thing that says that if you want to raise taxes in the state of California, you have to have a supermajority. You have to have 2/3 in the state assembly, which is crazy. And so historically what has happened is that the state of California has found itself behind the eight ball. They get, you know, all the way back to Howard Jarvis and Prop 13, tie the hands of the state. And then when the state doesn't function, stand around and go, oh, look at the state's broken. Let's turn the schools over to our buddies in the private school business. Let's turn the roads over to our buddies in the private toll road business.
What do the Koch brothers have to do with a project in California that was first scheduled to cost $43 billion, and now the costs are overrun up to $90 billion.
I'm talking about the ballot initiative that changed the
I'm talking
the
about
laws
what you're calling for is spending on these fantasy rails so that, oh, we can be like Europe, we can be like China. Do you want to be in China? Do you want to live under their oppression, their oppression of religious minorities, where you have 500,000 people stranded in a train station in China because there's nowhere else to go?
Are you really trying to tell me that the Heritage Foundation's position is that economic growth leads to political repression?
No, I'm trying to tell you that you're pointing to China as this
Well, I haven't mentioned China. You know, you're the one who mentioned China. But if you want to talk about China, I was in China. You know, I spent a month in China in November of 86, back when I stood on Tiananmen Square. There's a giant eight-lane highway there, and maybe once every 5 minutes a single car would go by. It was an ocean of black bicycles. There wasn't a building in the entire city that was taller than eight stories, and that was the Sheraton or the Hilton, whichever it was, the only place where you could get a decent American meal. And I could buy lunch for less than for 3 cents. That country was an absolute third world country. There were piles of coal outside everybody's house. People heated a single room. They were poor. And now look at the pictures of Beijing from the Olympics. Look at the pictures of Shanghai. China has come back. Now, you know, I'm not a fan of their political system, but they have built 5,000 miles of high speed rail.
And that's their reason. Now, how about Europe? If you look at the rail system in Europe, which is supposed to be this great shining example, one, Europe is bankrupt. They can't afford it.
Europe is not bankrupt.
People aren't even able to take the buses. They're not even taking the buses. Their percent of passenger travel on Europe rail has gone down over time, whereas buses and planes have gone up. Amtrak in the United States is a disaster. Nobody wants to use it.
Mike, I'm just astounded to hear this. I mean, I was in Sweden a couple of weeks ago.
I'm going to be
in Germany again. I'm going to be in Germany again in 4 weeks. You can take Deutsche Bahn across Germany. You can walk down. You can have a quiet conversation in these brand new spiffy cars. They don't rock from side to side. They travel 130, 140 miles an hour. That's the slow ones. And you know, one of the most modern rail systems in the world, the same with France, they got a high-speed rail.
Tom, if it's so great, why has the ridership decreased on rail in Europe?
Well, it might have something to do with the economic slowdown.
This started happening 5-10 years ago. Numbers from 1995 to 2007, the numbers went down from 6.6% to 6.1% of total passenger travel.
Oh, that's just horrible. That's a massive Mike. Let me ask you a really simple question. What happens, Mike, in a community? I live here in Washington, D.C. They're building the red line out. I think it's the red line out toward Dulles Airport. What happens when a metro station goes into a neighborhood?
Hey, there's some growth, but you know what?
There is growth and property values go up. Why would Troy say no to that?
If Metro is your example of a great run system, have at it. And I love to see the results.
I'm loving it. I've lived here for 16 months, and you know, we sold our car before we moved here. I can get all over the city with Metro System. It's fast, it's efficient, it's clean. I love it.
Come over to my house, we can continue the debate.
Heritage.org. Thank you, Mike.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, let's get the inside skinny on this from somebody in Detroit. Tony Tripiano will do it. Beautiful day here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Tony Tripiano, the host of First Shift with Tony Tripiano and on AM 1310 WDTW.com. Hey, Tony. Hey, brother. How you doing?
It's great to hear. I'm doing great. Great to hear from you. Great to talk to you. You look fabulous.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I was just debating this fellow from the Heritage Foundation who was telling me that Troy, Michigan, you know, Troy is the only town, I think, where I almost died. They've got a little airport there, and back in the 70s when I was flying airplanes, I flew out of that airport, and they've got a bunch of high-tension lines on one end of the runway, and I made the mistake of doing a downwind takeoff and just missed those wires by about 3 feet. It's incredible that, you know, biggest mistake I made in my life. Anyhow, but Troy has said no to these stimulus dollars. What's going on?
It's an interesting situation, and I don't know if Mike Brownfield is a journalist. If he is, he needs to go back to journalism school. There are a lot of facts that he's missing on this picture. Tom, the bottom line is this is a great program for a needed addition to that community. You know, there was a little bit of a racial overtone to what was going on there because there was a lot of discussion that by expanding that transit center, that of course would bring in people of color, God forbid, into what's a pretty lily white community.
Troy being a lily white community.
I mean, it's a very white community. They don't have a lot of ethnic diversity in Troy, Michigan.
Yeah.
And the mayor of the most recently elected mayor of Troy is a very is a pronounced Tea Party person.
Mm.
She was the one that was fighting the transit center. The crazy thing A, the money was there for the taking. B, the business community of the Chamber of Commerce agreed to pick up the $31,000 a year it would cost to maintain it. So there was zero cost to the community. Tell me why you don't embrace that and run with it, Tom.
Well,
and what we find out at the end of the day is that the city manager wanted it, who actually does make most of the decisions. The mayor is not, they don't have a strong mayor form of government, so she really only had one vote anyway.
Yeah, I think that they don't want it for the same reason that Chris Christie canceled a rail tunnel, for the same reason that when there was the Obama administration offered tens of millions of dollars to Rick Scott down in Florida to build a high-speed rail between Tampa and Orlando, I think it was, that he turned it down, because they don't want to put people to work in these red states, because they want the unemployment levels to be high going into the November election this year, so that people will blame President Obama.
Well, and of course, as you know, as the economy has begun to rebound, and I don't disagree with the word you've said, especially here in the state of Michigan, you know, manufacturing has rebounded, the auto industry is rebounding beautifully, the UAW has done a wonderful job of putting together collective bargaining agreements that help management and help labor. I mean, we're really building something here. Yeah, they're a little nervous because we're actually able to make progress without their help. Sure, I'd be nervous too, Tom.
Yeah, and I think this is why the Republican Party has suddenly started talking about social issues rather than the economy. You know, they were screaming about the economy. Now they know maybe we shouldn't do that. Let's scream about social issues instead, and let's talk about birth control. And the problem is that they're screaming about social issues in a way that might have worked in 1955.
Okay.
But I don't think it's working right now.
And again, nothing's working for them right now. And, you know, as I said on my show this morning, and I understand their frustration. I remember the late 70s, the early 80s as a Democrat. It was difficult. We had, you know, we were in a, as a party, we're in a transition, and it's difficult to be a party in transition. Unfortunately, they have no identity right now. They have no real candidates. They have nothing really to hold on to of substance. And what they really should be doing is trying to figure out a way to make progress that they can put their name on something that they can be proud of. Instead, they continue, and it's, what's really amazing to me is the candidates are so disconnected from what's happening in Washington, D.C. It's almost like these two groups aren't communicating with each other. They're in such disarray. I'd be disappointed too.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, what's your sense of how Michigan's going to go in the election in November?
Well, certainly Barack Obama, as long as he does what he has continued to do, which is to visit, which is to remind us, as he did actually in Washington, D.C. This week to the UAW convention, the CAP convention, he's bet on the American worker, and that bet paid off. And
yeah.
I don't think it was a tough bet to begin with, Tom Hartman, because we all know, you and I both know, that when you give the American people a chance to succeed, they will. They will choose success every time.
Absolutely. We're talking to Tony Tripiano, the host of First Shift with Tony Tripiano, WDTW Detroit, Michigan weekdays, 6 to 9 a.m., 1310 WDTW.com, the website. Senator Debbie Stabenow, a great senator from the state of Michigan. She's up for re-election in this election cycle. And you have a crackpot right-wing Republican congressman who decided to run against her, and he ran this incredibly racist ad. And now I understand that it has blown back against him in Michigan.
Yeah, not only did the polling numbers blow him away, she went from being 9 points up to 21 points up, Tom, in 3 days.
Wow.
They've scrubbed his website of the ad. You know, they've done everything they can do. The bottom line was, for 3 days, he went on every available media outlet that would talk to him and defended the ad as it was some wonderful thing, and I'm not going to back away from it. I'm standing by it. It's what I meant. Well, now you got to wear it, pal.
Holy cow, that's amazing. And across the state, do you think that there's any chance that Rick Snyder is he up for re-election this year?
No, he is not, but there is a new initiative. Michigan Rising is the group that is now coming after him again to recall him. What kind of momentum that will build, Tom, we'll find out. They start their revamped campaign on May 5th. They seem to be regrouped and re-energized, and so we'll see where that goes.
That's great.
Of course, our state house, which is solidly red, and our state senate, which is going to stay red for a while. But the state house is up, and we just need to turn, I believe it's 10 seats, and I see that will happen fairly well. So at least we'll be able to slow down some of the insanity after November of this year. But Tom, my biggest concern is between now and November of this year.
Yeah, the kind of damage that this guy can do.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough when they've got carte blanche to do what they want to do right now.
Yeah, with this law where he can just basically fire any elected official and replace him with a crony of his that the state will pay $250,000 to. It's incredible. Tony Tripiano. Tony, thanks for being with us today.
As always, my friend, thank you.
Great to get your perspective. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, the bad, and the incredible new vocabulary word, ugly. And your calls. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very pausoloquentously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, Ben Patrick. Patrick, a former NFL player, pulled a group of people from an overturned, crashed van in Phoenix last weekend. Patrick told reporters that he smelled gas at the crash site and knew he immediately needed to take action. With the help of some friends, he managed to get all the victims safely out of the crashed van and brought them to safety. Patrick described saving the people as an out-of-body experience, and when asked about his heroic actions, he said, "That's what I was raised to do. If people need help, you help." Patrick's altruistic personality is something seen far too little in America today, and it's very refreshing. The bad, Bank of America. Bank of America is planning to introduce a new monthly fee for customers who have checking accounts unless they agree to bank online, buy more products, or maintain certain balances in their accounts. This announcement comes just months after the bank faced a major consumer backlash for trying to create a $5 per month debit card fee. The new line of fees would range between $9 and $25 a month, but customers could avoid the fees by maintaining minimum balances, using a credit card, or taking out a mortgage with the bank. Bank of America executives have realized how badly they messed up during the financial crisis and are now trying to attach a fee to anything they can. The banksters are at it again, only now they're taking customers hostage. And the very, very ugly Chief Judge Richard Siebel. Siebel, a George W. Bush court appointee to the Federal District Court in Montana, forwarded a racist joke email comparing President Obama's conception to his mother having sex with a dog. He forwarded it to a group of his friends. Trying to save face, Siebel attempted to explain why he sent the email. He said he intended to forward the email and that it was not a mistake. In admitting that he despises the president, Siebel showed he clearly lacks the ability to use good judgment, which is frightening considering his job is to exercise judgment as a judge. His blatant racial hatred toward African Americans has no place in our society or in a judicial chamber and is very, very ugly. Comment on that. Boy, we get some pretty amazing, very, very uglies. Jim in Matlock, Washington. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
It's actually Bill, Tom.
Bill, my apologies. You're right. It is Bill. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to contest some of the ideas that that gentleman from the Heritage Foundation was presenting, especially in reference to rail travel.
Okay.
At least for myself, I had a bad experience a couple years ago, trying to fly, back from Florida. And it made me so negative that I said I wasn't going to fly for quite a while, and I've been just using the rails and driving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the last two trips that I tried to plan for, they were very difficult to book. There's a lot of people using the rails, at least up in the Northwest where I live.
You're talking about Amtrak. Yeah.
Amtrak, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Louise and I, when we lived in Portland, we would go up to Seattle for station events with AmTalk 1090, and, you have to book that train at least a week in advance because it sells out. And the same thing here in the Northeast Corridor. There's a lot of trains that will sell out, you know, certainly by the day of. Amtrak has a lot of customers, and when you consider the social good, all of the goods that come out of having a rail system, even if it doesn't absolutely break even on ticket prices, it is a net positive for the society, and that's therefore something that we should be growing and expanding. Thanks a lot, Bill, for the call and for your thoughts on that. Brody in Pelham, Alabama. Hey, Brody, what's up?
Hey, I was just wondering if there was any way we could
withdraw from government programs or maybe the limited risk derivatives market to fund alternative energy, like geothermal, hydroelectric, wind and solar, things like that.
We could, you know, I don't think we even need to fund it. I think that, although, you know, funding basic research, I think, is a good idea, you know, at the university level. But basically, I mean, look at what happened when Jimmy Carter was president, and he gave a tax incentive, tax credits to people who built energy-efficient homes, off-the-grid homes, solar homes, things like that. They got built all over this country. You'll find homes that are off the grid or very, very energy independent or nearly self-sufficient or totally self-sufficient. You'll find them all over this country, and they were built in 1979 and 1980 and early 1981 before Ronald Reagan did away with that tax credit program. All you need to do is give people a financial incentive, and it pays for itself because then they're not using oil, and we're not having to spend dollars on our military protecting the oil pipelines and the shipping lines and things. So that's what I would do, Brody. And I think it's just pretty straightforward stuff. Would be a good idea. It would be a very good idea. Peter, listening to KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Peter, what's up?
Hi. Yeah, you know, I was listening to your last the guy about the trains, and it reminded me of the call you had yesterday with somebody about the infrastructure and tolls, toll roads.
Mm-hmm.
And these to me are disingenuous arguments. What they do is they try to frame it to where the government can't work by, you know, Obama proposes an infrastructure bill last year, the Republicans shoot it down. They don't want government to work, so they can bitch about it not working, so they can propose these other things. That's why when he does, you know, he stands in front of a bridge in Boehner's district and says, we need to repair this. And the Republicans say, no, we don't want to do that because you'll get credit for it. The government will be seen to be doing something, and therefore we can't make it private.
Yeah.
So these arguments just seem disingenuous on their side of the aisle. They just don't want anything to work.
Well, and that's what I kept trying to point out to Mike is, you know, what this is really about is it's only happening in Republican states and Republican towns, and it's
right.
Happening because they don't want to put people to work. Because they want the unemployment levels to remain high, because that's the best weapon that they can use against Obama and other Democrats in the upcoming election. Good point, Peter. Thank you for calling and making it. Rob in Avondale, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Pretty good, Tom. Hey, I'm out here at the Day of Action, the pro-union protest.
Oh, yeah. This is the AFL-CIO that's sponsoring this National Day of Action today. Okay.
Yes, and let me just paint the picture for you. We got the House and the Senate buildings with a sidewalk in between them. We're on the House side. We have about 600 plus employees or union members. And on the other side of the sidewalk, we have the lobbyists and the representatives or the legislators over on that side eating lunch all at the same time.
Huh.
We had a couple of Democrat legislators come over and tell us that, there's a huge turnout. And it is making a difference. He said some of those Republican legislators are very worried.
Yeah, but they're sitting there having lunch with lobbyists.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So,
well, good on you, Rob.
Quite a contrast.
Yeah.
Quite a contrast here. And you know, we're going to have a rally at 1 o'clock. So if anybody listening here in Phoenix wants to come out and join us, we'd be happy to have you. And it's a great turnout.
Great. Okay, Rob, thanks a lot. And, shout out to everybody there. Head down to the rally there. And I'm sure you can find more information about that at AFLCIO.org and other websites. Thanks, Rob. Jenny in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jenny, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to ask you a couple questions. One of them is, do you think government is going to start fixing these sewer pipes? I remember you mentioning the other day we have to the tune of $1 trillion.
Yeah, $1 trillion in sewer pipes and $1 trillion in water pipes, $2.2 trillion altogether, actually.
Do you think there's any will or there will be in the future or near future to start repairing some of them?
An awful lot is going to depend on the election in November. If the Democrats can take a majority in the House, and I think that there's a very good chance that they will, I think the House of Representatives, people are getting it that they got burned by the Tea Party, and this is very much a do-nothing Congress. They've been saying no to everything. And if the Democrats can hold the Senate, and Olympia Snowe bailing on the Republican Party is going to help that prospect, and then President Obama will not be worried about re-election, and so he'll be free to be himself.
To become who he really is and to accomplish a whole lot. He won't have to work with them. Well, the other thing, I had lots of things listening to you talk. You know, I'm from Florida. I'm dealing with Rick Scott. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Good luck.
Well, yeah, right. One other, we're trying to endure him. But anyway, one other thing I just wanted to ask you, and the person who answered the phone told me you covered it a lot 2 months ago, but about Romney tying his dog to the roof of the car for a 12-hour drive to Canada.
Yeah.
I don't know why people aren't more, and just, that's just inhumane. That's just unconscionable. I can't. Yeah.
Well, first of all, it happened like 20 years ago, and so it's like, you know, it's an old story.
He still did it. He shows very poor judgment.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think he's got the spoiled rich kid syndrome of, you know, he just, you know, what he wants is what he wants, and that's what he's going to get. And the dog freaked out, apparently, you know, brown liquid coming down the back of the car. And so Romney pulled over and hosed down the dog and hosed down the car and then just kept right on going. And one of the kids apparently told a reporter that once they got to Canada, the dog took off and was never seen again. And nobody's been able to confirm that, and nobody's been able to confirm whether the dog was ever seen again. But Romney has admitted this. In fact, he came out and he said, PETA is not my friend. We've got the clip of it around here someplace. And,
you know, it shows poor judgment in everyone in that family.
Yeah.
Him, his wife, and the children. I mean,
well,
that couldn't have happened in my family.
Yeah, I doubt the kids had a lot of say in it, although the one kid who was telling the story about the dog, you know, freaking out and having, you know, terrified diarrhea down the back of the car, was telling it kind of like a joke. So, I don't know. You know, Jenny, it's.
And that Judge Siebel, I just want to tell you real quick. I've been married to my African American husband for 37 years. I can't believe that Bush could put someone in office who thinks like that.
Yeah, I am with you.
You're
thanks,
Jenny. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So how do we build our infrastructure in the United States? It's a pretty simple process, actually. We'll get to that right after this.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Well, we've been debating Troy, Michigan. We debated it with the Heritage Foundation. Tony Tripiano came on and talked about it. And Greg, listening on WDTW, lives in Troy, Michigan. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling in. What's going on in Troy?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call again. This is 3 days in a row. I'm a big fan of Tony Tripiano. I'm not going to knock him. He's a good guy, and he's definitely on the right side of the fence. But he did kind of – I'm a resident of Troy for 27 years, raised my family here, sent my kids to school there. He kind of portrayed Troy as a lily white community, which is really not true. Troy is very diverse. We have a pretty mixed population here. We've got a lot of Asians, a lot of Indian people.
The last time, Greg, I was in Troy was probably 8 years ago, and it was an upper middle class suburb of Detroit. You're saying it's not?
No, it's still an upper middle class suburb of Detroit, but
yeah,
there are a lot of upper middle class professional non-white people living here.
I see. Okay, yeah, but I think, frankly, I think that, okay, I got it, Greg. Thanks a lot for the call. I think that typically when you see these kind of things happening, it's more class issues than race issues, and I think you just confirmed that. Brian in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. But I'll get better.
Just wanted to give you a little update on some of the Tea Party candidates who just
sure.
won an election to be county commissioners.
Okay.
Their first item that they are pushing through is a reassessment of property taxes. So what that's going to do to normal working people basically is raise their taxes on property anywhere from 20% to 60%.
So these are the Tea Party county commissioners want to raise working people's property taxes. I'm sure there's a punchline coming here that has to do with rich people's taxes.
Well, put it this way. Anybody who owns a home between $100,000 and $200,000 are the vast majority of the people whose taxes are going up.
Right. Okay.
So anybody who had purchased a home that's worth $100,000 or less, they'll see a slight decrease. Anybody who owns a home that's at least $250,000 and above are getting tax decreases.
Wow.
So everybody in the middle will be paying for that.
So people who own houses of a value between $100,000 and $250,000, which would be in your community in Allentown, Pennsylvania, would be a middle-class home,
Those people are actually seeing their property tax rates go up. But if you own a mansion, if you own a multi-million-dollar home, your property tax rates are going to go down. Do I have that
Absolutely.
Right? And this is the this is three Tea Party people here there who were elected to the county commission.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Amazing.
And the leader of that little block that got elected, his name is Scott Ott, and he is very right, endorsed by the Sean Hannitys of the world. So you know where that's coming from.
Yeah, yeah. The Sean Hannity with his $200 million contract. Yeah, I know exactly where that's coming from. Brian,
exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's looking at
yeah.
Yeah,
thanks a lot for the call. Gloria in Shannon, North Carolina. Hey, Gloria, what's up?
Yes, Tom. I wanted to comment on the gentleman talking about the train ridership.
Mm-hmm.
Shannon is on the I live about 2 miles from the tracks on the Eastern Seaboard.
Yep.
From Florida to
That Amtrak line.
West Coast.
Yep.
And my daughter, she like the gentleman before, had a bad experience flying, so she started riding the train, and every time she comes, she has a problem getting on the train because it's usually full. She came one time, she had to sit on the floor.
Wow.
Because there were no seats in any of the cars.
Yeah.
And she has a time getting, and she has to book way in advance if she wants to get on the train.
Yeah.
And it's always been a problem.
Yep. Amtrak is doing good.
If he says that the train ridership is down, it don't seem to be. It seems to be more now.
Well, he said it was down in Europe, and from 6.6% to 6.1%. I don't know where that number came from. I don't know what part of Europe he's talking about. I don't know what the circumstances that are. And here in the United States, you know, my understanding is that Amtrak ridership is up, but it certainly looks like it every time I'm on an Amtrak train. I'm with you, Gloria. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Tom in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Tom, what's up?
I just need to ask you a question, Tom, and it's my opinion that the government created the recession in order to get enough boots on the ground to fight their wars, because the government, with an all-volunteer military, the military competes with private sector to get jobs. So in my opinion, this recession was caused in order to get boots on the ground to fight their wars.
Well, apropos of that, Tom, I wouldn't subscribe to that particular theory, but let me tell you, we have so much of our economy now dependent upon the military. The Pentagon's budget has tripled since 1997. So much of our economy is dependent upon the military, and if we were to shut down all our wars and bring all our soldiers home, you would have a huge spike in unemployment in the United States, and that's not a healthy thing for our country. And so to that extent, I'm totally with you. Doyle in Boise, Idaho, you got an update on Occupy Boise. We have a minute to the end of the show, Doyle. It's all yours.
Okay. Well, my name is Doyle Allen, and our local Occupy Boise movement got a kind of a small reprieve victory. They can not occupy their tents or sleep in them and prepare meals, kind of like on the decision of the National Mall in 1984 that the court ruled on, that the tents can remain, and it's a symbol of their protest and their First Amendment rights, you know, to free speech, and that's their symbol. They just can't sleep in the tents,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of odd. So
yeah, it's kind of the anti-vagrancy laws that they're pushing.
And that's basically, and let's say the capital leaders and stuff are going to meet, and they're going to talk about, well, you know, they're going to say try to work out maybe some compromises, but the judge in his
Doyle, I'm sorry, we're out of time, but thank you for the report from Occupy Boise. Please give my very best regards to everybody there and keep it up. Coming up tomorrow, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders will be here for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up, when you get engaged. Occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.